it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day. Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius. And last night, Sacramento concluded their season-long dominance of the Lakers, completing a 4-0 sweep with three blowout victories in a game that was a little different than the others. Lakers lose 120 to 107. Lakers make it a point to keep Sacramento out of the paint. And they do a good job relative to the previous game, but give up a lot of threes in the process of that. They do not rebound the ball well, give up a ton of second chance points again to them. For me, that was a game on offense. Lakers stunk, particularly the stars and D'Lo, the Lakers' top three guys. I put the stars and D'Lo in kind of different categories, because one guy is a, you know, $17, $18 million guy and the other two are max players. But at halftime, LeBron and AD had combined for just 13 points on 5 of 16 from the field. D'Lo had been 0 for 6. Lakers finish again with only 107 points. And D, in the pod that we did right after the last Sacramento loss called Star Duos, one of the things I'd talked about was I had seen a degradation of the on-ball capabilities of LeBron and AD, and I think for different reasons, but I thought that kind of reared its ugly head in this game. So talk to me a little bit about just what you saw from that game, and then specifically from the offensive side of the ball.
An idea that you have used in the past is like the rock, paper, scissors mm-hmm. idea. And I think that that is becoming more and more true across the league in terms of like who can beat who. Mm-hmm. And I think this is particularly true in the Western Conference, where the Lakers have had a fair amount of success against a lot of the good teams at the top of the conference. And it's because the ingredients to beat them are ingredients that the Lakers actually have. And one of the things that stood out to me over this first part of March was how the Nuggets and the Kings have given the Lakers issues in very similar areas. And the Kings did it again, basically. And after the game, LeBron had said something that you really only say when the other team just kicks your butt multiple times, which is, they've had our number. And when you basically say they've had our number, that's no longer a discussion around tactical changes or personnel things and who's available and who's not. Over the course of four games this season, over different stretches of the season, with different guys available, the Kings have been better. Like, one of the games was close. One of the games I thought the Lakers clearly should have won, it went to overtime and Sabonis had fouled out and they had to play JaVale McGee against, right? Like, there were those factors and the Lakers still lost. And I think for me, the thing that stood out most was, and I don't want to like harp on D'Lo's struggles per se, but he was the one that got way more defensive attention in terms of ball pressure. It was the same the last game against mm-hmm. them. And so I thought all of the on-ball work of all of LeBron, AD, and D'Lo were all compromised by things in which they are either susceptible to or are becoming more susceptible to as they age.
What did you see from LeBron specifically?
So I will say this. I thought through the first three quarters or so that this was one of the worst games LeBron had played like all season. And maybe that's recency bias. Just in terms of all around play, I thought he just didn't have it. And there was a didn't have it physically aspect, and there was a didn't have it mentally aspect. as well with him. I saw him taking a lot of shortcuts mentally. And that's when I know that it's like maybe not the best LeBron night. And so with LeBron specifically, in terms of the challenges that he was facing on ball, I thought he still had trouble beating switches. And this was a Kings strategy. One of the things I thought could happen is that the Kings were going to switch the LeBron and AD pick and roll. And then what would that look like in the next steps of attack? And they did switch the AD LeBron pick and roll, and they put Sabonis on LeBron, and they did so comfortably, and they were willing to give up the switch to get Harrison Barnes on to AD and then help from there. And one of the things the Kings do pretty well against the Lakers is they shrink the floor because their guards and their perimeter players are fast. And so they effectively cheat the distance between their own defender, like the off-ball defenders. They will sag off just far enough to show help. They sag off of the Lakers. They sag off of LeBron and they sag off of AD, and they basically invite the jumper. And if you drive against them, they show help. And they feel comfortable then recovering with their guards because their guards are fast and athletic. And LeBron didn't beat switches very effectively for most of the game last night. And it wasn't until the fourth quarter when they basically started screening with guards instead of with AD and making guards hedge that LeBron was able to get downhill. And I don't want to make it sound like I'm some sort of genius, Pete, but this was the same idea I was talking to you after the pod about. I was just like, hey, man, like they could end up switching these LeBron AD pick and rolls. And at that point, they should either post AD against the switch, or they're going to have to come screen again with a guard against Sabonis to make a guard hedge. And those were basically the only actions that had any real success with LeBron and AD at the center of things. It was posting against a smaller player in order to force help, or having LeBron drive against a smaller player without a lot of on-ball help. And the fact that LeBron and AD, neither of them could make Sabonis pay for being the defender was, to me, the difference in the game.
I thought neither of them made Harrison Barnes pay when they had the chance to go at him either, right? And that's something true. LeBron didn't make a shot at the rim until the fourth quarter, right? In those on those guard on-ball screens. And so that's something that is something we see more and more. AD, after that game, I went back and watched each of AD's shot attempts against Sacramento. He went 26 of 62 against Sacramento this season, which is 41.9%. And as an on-ball player, I had him at 3 for 15. Most of those makes were dump-offs and rolls and things like that. But as an on-ball guy, he was, 3 for 15 from the field, which is both low in attempts and makes, right? We played four games against him, so that's less than one bucket. And so this, to me, is there's sort of a what we may have a long off season to discuss these sorts of things, but if your max guys, put D'Lo to the side for a second, but if your max guys in an important game can't get past their guy or can't score with the ball in their hands, the job of compromising the defense in the first place, which is what switches are really built to kind of not give up, right? Is that idea of we're not going to get compromised, by a screen. By a screen or something like that, you got to beat us one-on-one. I'm really concerned about our stars as one-on-one players at this point if they don't have that big physical advantage. And that's something that is just kind of central to the idea of the team working,
Yeah, it's an interesting idea. And this is probably a more long-term discussion. But as you were talking right there, an idea that popped up to me is the one time the Lakers won the championship, it was because the too many guys theory was to optimize LeBron and AD rather than to optimize someone else. What we've been talking about in terms of the too many guys theory this season for the Lakers is the Lakers have too many guys and you don't have anyone to guard Rui. Mm-hmm. For example, in some of these high leverage games, you know who's been going off? Rui. Rui's been going off. And it's because the other team doesn't have enough guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, him and Austin kept us in that game. They had 36 points in that first half.
Well, even go back to the Denver game. Right? Like it was Rui again. And in recent contests, it's just like, oh, you know who the other team doesn't have a dude for, it's Rui. Right. And that's the effect of LeBron and AD sliding up to the four and the five. And in the Lakers' best seasons, they won the title in 1920. And they were a title contender the following season, even after the shortest offseason and everything else. But AD wrecked his knee. And even against Phoenix, they looked like they were in position to beat the Suns. And then AD got hurt again. And I don't want to make it revisionist history. I don't want to say they would have stampeded to the title or anything like that. But those two versions of the team were like, yeah, we're going to start a real center. And AD and LeBron are going to play down a position. And other teams never felt comfortable playing their center against AD in order to put a power forward on JaVale McGee or a power forward onto Dwight Howard or a power forward onto Marc Gasol or a power forward onto Andre Drummond. They felt those players were going to be too effective against those matchups. And so they guarded LeBron with small forwards and they guarded AD with power forwards. And their advantages against those players in those seasons were just bigger. And I think what we're seeing some of this season in terms of on ball stuff, Pete, is the decline and degradation of Anthony Davis's jumper as like an every possession weapon means that he is playing bruiser ball against players who are more adept at defending bruiser ball players. Now, if he got to go up against power forwards every night, like if Harrison Barnes was tasked with defending Anthony Davis, then he could play this style of basketball and probably be more effective. Would it be ideal that he was still a 10-foot and in player? No, it wouldn't. I think he still needs, long, big picture, he still needs this aspect of his game to return. But I do think that the idea that you just presented, which is like as an on-ball player, he was X for X against this team and both X's were way too low, including especially on the make side, then it's likely because he's struggling in the exact way against the exact opponent that is, this is the one way I'm comfortable defending you and this is your one way to try to beat me, if that makes sense.
It does. I also think there's a chain reaction effect of like him not having confidence in that jumper to where he was defended by Harrison Barnes on several possessions and he didn't really look to attack him. He's very much waiting for the double or the soft double to come and then to be able to swing the ball out. Because like you said, they do shrink the court and they are going to seal off the paint in the best that they can. And so if you can't shoot over the top of that or don't want to because you don't have confidence in your jumper, that's going to have a cascading effect. So let's take a break, come back and keep it going.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
A couple of the examples of that, D, were in that first quarter where AD drove right into traffic and coughed it up. This isn't always shown in its in shot attempts, right? These were turnovers, and that was something that was really killer for this Lakers team yesterday, where these were live ball turnovers. But it's sort of like slamming himself into a congested paint and losing the ball from there. And that, to me, D, when you talk about the way the team was built in 20 and 21 compared to now, individually, both LeBron and AD are different players than they were. They were dominant offensive hubs, dominant guys that you could throw the ball to. That, yes, if they would use that advantage where if they had a size advantage, they would do that. But the lineups that brought that team home were often LeBron and AD at the four and five, right? And Kuz in the mix, or a Markieff Morris, right? If you look at the net ratings of those groups, that we long for the days of two big lineups and AD at the four, LeBron, AD, and a traditional five were just barely above above zero in terms of net rating, right? In most of most series, most games. But I do think that there is a value to having that lineup over the course of the regular season. And we've already kind of crossed that territory. But to me, it's the, like, they're not the same offensive guys in ways that it kind of changes the theory of what they can do. So I guess that's the point I'm at. Even however the season ends, I think this last stretch is very informative of what can the Stars still do?
Yeah, I think that that's fair. I'm pretty generous to AD in the regard that I think that he's a rhythm player and I think that he needs the ball more. And so one of the things that I always go back to, particularly about the title season, is that idea of like repetition. I'm going to go on a tangent here, but I'll try to land the plane. The title season, one of our biggest complaints was about Rajon Rondo. Mm-hmm. And it was like, why does Rondo continue to play? Why does he continue to play so much? They need to play Alex Caruso more. I feel like I complained all of the time about this.
Me too.
But Rondo paid it off in the end. One of the other things I was super frustrated with that season was like, why is Anthony Davis continuing to take 16-foot jumpers on so many of these possessions? AD was like a 30 usage player. I think he was like in the 29s. And some of that was just like, oh, mid-post touch, turn in face, jab step, like 6'11 Carmelo Anthony over here, right? Like basically triple threat work. I'm getting up this jumper. But Pete, at the end of the season, that paid off too. And he was effectively like, I've been shooting jumpers this entire season. And then he caught a rhythm in the bubble that was unreal. And maybe it was just like, oh, a one season stretch and whatever. But since the season that he's become basically a full-time center, he has basically been screening so much more. I haven't looked at this stat lately, but I was sort of shocked at how many screen assists Anthony Davis gets now. That used to be like the Rudy Gobert special that the Jazz would point to as like, look how effective he is on offense. You're not.
We, you know, working for the Lakers marketing department, we're always looking for like stats or to shine a light on the players, right? This guy is averaging this and, or the team's doing this over this many games. And someone had brought up, hey, he's like at or near the top of the league at screen assist. Should we call that out? And I'm like, we're not the Utah Jazz. We're not posting that.
We're not. No. Hey, you're laughing, but it's like, it's true. Yeah. To me, it's one of those like, oh, you're a hustle player. This is how you're helping. I know there's value in that, but it's just like, that's not a stat that I care about when it comes to Anthony Davis, but he is helping in that way. Mm-hmm. The point I was trying to make is that I want him to touch the ball more. I want him to get more isolations. I want him just with the ball. And the coach is basically telling him, no, bro, like you got to shoot. Shoot. Shoot all the time. Like we don't care. One of the things we've been talking about offline is Spencer Dinwiddie and how Dinwiddie just hasn't been shooting very much. And it's like, okay, bro, like you've averaged 18 points in this league. Like you've been a 20 point scorer. Like you can score. No one's going to get mad at you. And for shooting the ball, it feels like Dinwiddie is treating every possession like it's a game 7 playoff possession where it's just like, oh no, no, no. Have to hunt the very best shot. I'm turning this shot down in order to move the ball on. And sometimes I'm just like, it's not that serious. Mm-hmm. I understand the team is trying to win these games, but shoot the ball. And I want the same thing from Anthony Davis. I want him to get touches and I want him to shoot. I want him posting up and I want him shooting. I want him shooting way more. And one of the reasons why I want him shooting way more is because I think he is a rhythm offensive player. And so I think it's difficult for, this is a chicken or the egg question. Right. Like it's a, like have his skills degraded? So if you gave him the ball, he's not going to be as effective, right? And that's why his numbers are down. And he's not shooting as much because he's not confident. I'm open to that interpretation. I'm also of the mind, though, that it's just like, well, never know until he's getting up 20 shots a game. And you're basically just telling him like, hey, bro, like, I don't care. I don't care that you're missing. You've got to keep going at it.
I get that. But here are AD's shot attempts over his 5 seasons with us in the regular season per game. 17.7, 17.0, 17.4, 17.2, and 17. And so he's been fairly consistent. Now, your point is well made regarding how he's getting those types of looks, but I would argue he gets the ball a decent amount where he doesn't look to attack that. And one of the things that's changed aside from his jumper is he's not beating guys to the spot. He wasn't like the jumper and the three ball and all that. His career high in attempts was in the title season. But that was always sort of a side dish to the fact that he was such a monster around the rim. And the way that he would beat guys like Sabonis and Jokic and these bigger physical guys that are giving him problems now is he would go around them and around the basket, right? And so he'd draw a ton of fouls because he'd beat a guy to a spot and get an early post seal or flash cut into the paint and score over that. And it's, we talk so much about the jumper, but it's the, I mean, he's 31 compared to 26 when we won the title with him. And so that to me, again, is part of my concern is that I don't see that athletic burst on the ground in terms of speed and short area quickness in that same way, where it's like, if that's the case, the jumper becomes absolutely essential at that point.
100%. No, I'm not disagreeing that as he ages, he's going to become more like we saw the same exact thing with Pau Gasol to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. Like the Lakers got Pau Gasol at a very similar stage in his career. Second contract, I'm an all NBA type player now. I think that AD is better than Pau Gasol, but it's just like very similar player archetype in terms of, oh, you were a sort of skinny, power forward, rangy player, and then you grew into becoming basically a full-time center. And hitting and taking and making jump shots became a bigger part of Pau's diet as he aged. And AD is actually going the opposite direction. He is becoming more of like a bruiser player, where Pau was the one who was just like, okay, well, I'm going to stretch this out. And AD was the one younger, like earlier in his career, where he was just like, well, I'm the guard.
Right.
Like, go look at his New Orleans tape. He's not doing that anymore for sure. I don't know, man. A part of me is like, I totally see the argument of, well, he has to do these other things. I think that in a very similar way to what we were talking about earlier, that if he's not getting the touches, then he's going to go towards the things that he feels more comfortable doing in the touches that he does get. And his touches are not the same. And he's not getting the ball in the same parts of the floor. The shot attempts point is a good point, but many more of his touches, I feel like, are coming from the prospect of he's rolling in to the paint
dump offs and
getting a
like
touch
that, yeah.
Rather than, right? It's just like it's pick and pop or it's pick and short roll. It's pick and roll all of the way to the basket. And don't get me wrong, like those are always going to be a steady diet for him. But it's the post touches that I'm like, this is how you get a big guy the ball. Is by throwing it to him where he can isolate. He's not a guard. Treating him as if, well, like your shot creation chances are going to be split 50-50 or 60-40 between operating at the top of the floor and trying to beat guys off of the dribble. If you're talking about his athletic burst has changed, is that even the best way to try to say, like, this is where we're going to utilize you? So it's tricky. I think it's muddy.
Let's take another break and keep going. I've asked this question a couple of times with respect to AD on the pod, and it probably sounds rhetorical when I ask it, but I genuinely don't know, and I'd love to hear your thoughts of if you put AD in the those scenarios, right, where he's got that. Let me ask you this. Give me a scenario that you would say this is the ideal way and place to get AD the ball.
I think the ways that he's getting the ball now are perfectly fine. I should say that. He's scoring 20-something points a game, and he's a fairly effective
offensive
player.
I'm saying as an on-ball player. Forgive me, as a one-on-one guy.
As a one-on-one player, he is a left block post player, and he should be getting the ball there more often than what he does.
Okay, so let's talk about it from the left block, which I agree that that's his best spot. If he's playing a guy who's stronger than him and is sagging off of him, and as you were saying earlier, surrounded by teammates that shrink the floor, right? They have that ability to help into the paint and recover out to the perimeter in ways that it's sort of you're being one and a half teamed. It's not a double team, but it's a soft double throughout most of the possession. I don't know how AD scores if he doesn't take jumpers, take and make that 16-foot jumper on a regular basis.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
And so if he's not making or taking that, that's how yesterday's game started, right? Is he not only missed a couple jumpers, they were like short into the right type of misses.
Yes, he's in.
And
he's in a terrible rhythm right now.
And after that is when he dribbled right into traffic a couple times for turnovers when that same shot was available. He just didn't want to take it. And so I kick that to you, D, is just like if he's on that left block and being guarded by a guy that's a Sabonis size and they're sagging off of him and, you know, it's all built – it's the same situation we've seen. I don't know how he scores.
All I'm telling you is that he needs to be encouraged and re-encouraged and coached and encouraged and re-encouraged to continue to take that shot.
I think that's fair. I think that's fair.
Like, I'm just telling you, he's Anthony Davis. My point is that all great players need to continue to be coached. All great players need to continue to be encouraged. They all need something in them. If coaches weren't needed, then you just roll the ball out and the coaches.
I have plenty of appreciation for what a good coach can do, but the players got to be able to bring it individually too, you know?
100%. And there's a meeting in the middle. And this is one of the main arguments I've made about Anthony Davis as like a talent from the time that I've gotten to watch him and just understanding his journey and how he was marketed or discussed even as a prospect when he was at Kentucky. The idea of him was he is a team player and he does not care about his stats. And he is the guy who is going to do the things that his team needs to win, even if it's not shooting the ball. Like, he doesn't care. And the national championship game that he helped win at Kentucky was like built upon this myth. Even like, if you want to call it a myth, it's just like he barely shot and he dominated the game. And that's Anthony Davis. And on the other side, it was he can be the next Tim Duncan and he can be the guy who like you can run an offense through and this, that and the other. And it wasn't until like his second or third season in like in New Orleans, but he got there where he was ultimately like, oh, this dude's scoring 25, 28 points a game is like a number one option player. And I remember when the Lakers traded for him, it was just like, wait, you're giving LeBron James Anthony Davis? Right? But the idea was still just like that there was a certain amount of like, no, bro, like we need you to go get it. And the one of the stories that always sticks out to me or sort of the comments around the Lakers run to the title was how much like Rondo was a guy. And even Cousins at the early part of that year when he was on the roster still, where it was like Rondo was always in AD's ear about like be aggressive, be aggressive, be aggressive. Like you got to keep shooting. You got like I'm throwing you the ball even in awkward places just because we're going to try to get you a shot. And I'm saying that my sense of AD is like he needs that. He's not. You remember the Kobe stuff where Kobe would be like, I'm like, I'll go 1 for 30
right
before I go 1 for 7.
Yeah, that's not AD.
That's not Anthony Davis, right? And so the part of me about the coaching stuff is more about that stuff, the mentality stuff, the I'm a cog in the machine stuff. And I think it's very easy for AD to slip back into the idea of like, I'm going to screen to help get the guards open. And I'm going to do the parts of the teamwork stuff that are going to help facilitate the success of the entire group. And if my numbers suffer for it, as long as we're winning basketball games, I feel good about that. And I'm saying, great, that's a great mentality to have. I also think that he needs to be continuously pushed and pushed and pushed, particularly as an offensive player, but just in general as a player to keep him on the right path of like, this is what we need from you.
For sure. For sure.
I just really believe in him as a player. And I'm not saying the way that he's struggled is like someone else's fault. He's played poorly against the Kings, and I'm not trying to dismiss that at all, but I'm a big believer in trying to optimize your best players, and where his failings begin and where the optimization starts to drift, I'd like to see those come more into focus for me so that I could better analyze how much his failings are about his mm-hmm. own failings and how much his failings are more about, well, like, are we steering the ship away from you in ways that I think impact him specifically as a player, if that makes sense.
It does. I think it's a little generous, though, in that, like, max guys that you can throw the ball to, it's hard to scheme them out. The more specific the circumstances a guy needs to succeed, the less capable he usually is, right? Like, to make an absurd comparison, prime LeBron James or prime Kobe Bryant, there was no scheme or anything.
Those are guards. Well,
prime Shaq, right? Prime, there's guys like Jokic, guys like Embiid. But part of that, too, is that they can actually shoot jump shots, right? And so their individual play, it's very difficult to come up with some scheme or some sort of system that stops them. And I agree with your point about AD coming into the league as a guy that can dominate the game without scoring, but he's also losing the rebounding battle to Sabonis badly. He's losing that individual matchup significantly, and we don't have guys on the perimeter. This is something that, to me, it's all true. It's a combination of, like, surrounding roster, AD's capabilities, coaching and all of that. But I do think at the core primary ingredient of that are the individual players' capabilities. And last night's game was just concerning to me from both LeBron and AD standpoint for different reasons. And so we're going to wrap up here. We might be back tomorrow, maybe back on Monday. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
James has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
And Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound is Lonnie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel the winner. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe. Hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Score. Two. Score. One.
Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable.
For the victory. It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant. Yes.
And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.